What's going on, everybody? Mark with CCO's The Science of Fishing. I'm here with Jamin and Levi from Mazarine Dock Boxes. They make a killer product, guys, and you're here to learn all about it.
You've landed on CCO's The Science of Fishing, where passion meets precision. Hold on tight as we dive in. But before we do, we would like to thank Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. for sponsoring this episode.
All right, guys, how you doing?
Great. Four Lauderdale Mud Chef.
How's it going for you guys? We're on day five now. It's
fantastic.
It's been a lot, right?
Yeah, probably like our feet hurt.
Yeah, man.
You're having a great week, though.
Around, right?
Yeah, but it's been good. We've been really fortunate with the weather. It's been real breezy,
yeah.
Which is nice. Not the best for boating, but it's wonderful for the boat show.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure we get a lot more traffic that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. So for the people at home that are listening in, you guys make a kick-ass dock box, right? So kind of tell me how you guys came up with that idea and kind of what was going on. I know we talked about it the other night briefly, but let's get into it.
Yeah, sure. So our story is probably like a lot of products that get made. I had something happen to me personally. I had my daughter and son out on a boat. We went out in the Gulf of Mexico with some friends, and I had just bought them brand new life vests. So about maybe $160 worth of life vests for them at the time they were smaller. And we went out, had our fun, you know, kind of come back late. And I did, I think, what probably every boat owner at some point has done is we just kind of wanted to get home. So we took the life vest, put them in the dock box. Well, when I came back, what was supposed to be the next day, but it ended up being like a week and a half later, they were just trashed. They were molded, mildewed. And I pulled them out and I grabbed it and my daughter looked at me and she just said, no, not doing that. So I literally thought, I wonder if anyone ever thought to put a dehumidifier in a dock box. So I got on my phone really quick and looked it up, and there was nothing there. And then the second part actually involves Levi.
It was kind of there's a combination of different things. It was like two different areas that we saw a void in the market. On that side was the functionality. There was nothing that took care of that problem. And at that point in time, he was just like, "Huh, it's weird that nobody does that. That should be done." Then one day we were getting ready. Because we love diving together, fishing together. And we were headed out on a dive trip spearfishing. And our friend's house that we were leaving out of lives in a really nice neighborhood. Water canal to go out. As you're coming out of the canal, last house out of the canal, right on the point. I mean, it's just the best house in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
$7 million home right on the point. Big old azimuth, Cape Horn up on a lift, 6 jet skis. And then he had this dock box where the hinge was completely rusted off the back, the lid was crooked, and it was still padlocked on the front side, even though the hinge wasn't put together and the padlock was just bleeding rust all down the front. And the dude has like Ferraris and Lamborghinis in the driveway, and we're like, that just doesn't fit, right?
Yeah, there's gotta be eyesore.
Yeah. There's gotta be something for that guy.
Yeah.
And we just kind of joked back and forth, because you know, we're going through the canal, so it's slow. Next 20-30 minutes, we were like, you could do this, you could do this, you could match the boat with the name, and just kind of joking about a few different things. And then didn't really, again, people talk about things all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
And we didn't revisit it at all for a while. It was a couple years after that incident that he sold his company where he was working, and he called me up and he's like, hey, you remember whenever we were headed out on the boat and we were saying, you know, somebody should do this?
Yeah.
He's like, I want to do it. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
That's kick-ass, man.
Levi and we've known each other pretty much our whole lives. Our families grew up together. We're still very close with their family, but I've known Levi since he was a small young man. And I knew that he had a really good mind for figuring out problems.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of playing around with it, and I got to the point where we were kind of getting stuck on some engineering. So I called him up, and he came to the shop and said, I bet we could build like a prototype. And then that was a little over 4 years ago.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So for people at home, you guys aren't just a regular dock box, one of those white dock boxes that just sit there. And you get West Marine, right?
Yeah.
You guys make custom tailored things. So what kind of stuff do you guys put in there? You said a dehumidifier, right?
Sure.
Keep all your stuff nice and no mildew, no mold.
Yeah.
What else can you do?
Right. So dock boxes are used for a variety of things. Like we mentioned, you know, life vests, lines, dive gear. Towels, cushions, we put all kinds of stuff in there.
Yeah.
So the dehumidifier definitely is the big performance issue that we solve. The second is security. All of our cases have built-in locks to them, so you don't throw a padlock on a Mazarine. It's built-in, either a mechanical, which is custom-built for us, or keyless entry, which also locks the case. So you can open it with your key fob in it.
It's like a car.
Yep. Yeah, you got it.
And it opens up, right? I saw you guys do that the other night. You just press the button up.
You got it. Yeah, you got it. And everyone is 100% solar. Okay. So it runs all off solar power.
So you don't need it. So hardwire it. You don't need any of it.
Right. Yeah. You can plug it in if need be, if you have a roof above your dock. But most of the units are solar. They just sit out and do the job. But the third one was probably the funnest part of what we did, is we realized, well, if we've got a box with solar power, you can do a lot of other cool things. And so each Mazarine now is custom built. We build it to match the boat. So we'll put like the boat logo on the front or on the back or both. We can do artwork inside. We have LED lights on the inside, so you can see what you're doing at night.
Okay.
You can actually even do really cool artwork, even photography inside. So it really is kind of made to be a complement, you know, to the boat when it sits there, but also solve a performance and a security issue as well.
Right, right. Are you guys thinking about putting speakers in there?
we have some conversations. I don't know, name drop JL, but we were talking to those guys the other night, and we want to get them a case. They want to actually do a mock-up with us for a party box.
Yeah,
I'm thinking if you have your own private dock and you just have that thing there just rocking.
Mm-hmm.
That would kick ass.
That's cool. You can keep not only your dry goods in there, but our new model now has the ability for the middle of it to have panels drop where it can be a big cooler.
Oh, okay.
So you can actually keep your drinks in there.
Oh, dude, it's a party box.
It's a party box. Yeah, so we're working on that. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, there's initially, whenever I was talking to them about it, because they were saying they would need some interior space to kind of, you know, account for their airflow and everything that they need for all their stuff, which would take up a good bit of storage. And we're like, let's not think about this model as a storage case. This one is the party box. I'm like, you know what? If it's going to be a party box, we can do some pretty cool stuff there, actually. Yeah. I'm like, you know, we have some things in the works. So that case, whenever it comes to town, it'll be the party.
Right.
That'll be cool. Yeah. I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, us too. Us too.
That's awesome. So we're on the Science of Fishing, and what kind of applicability do you guys see for those guys that are fishermen that want to have one of these boxes that are secure, that have a dehumidifier? What kind of performance can they see in terms of storing their gear and all that stuff?
Yeah. I'll let Levi speak to the engineering side of it, but from a security standpoint, just the ability to keep gear for the boat, especially center console owners, because they have the limited storage on the boat, that they can keep things right next to the boat and make sure that they're not going to get tampered with.
Right.
From an engineering standpoint.
Yeah. So with the fishing side, fishing and diving, honestly, both.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gear involved in both of those things. And whenever you're dealing with the center console guys, which, you know, a lot of our friends and even Jamin, whenever we were on his boat, center console, you're moving a lot of stuff back and forth. And if you're able to take some of that journey out of it and still not be worried about your stuff, be it your tackle, your reels, your dive gear, vests, tanks, regulators, you know, spear guns, whenever you're actually able to rinse that stuff off, not feel like you need to hang it up off of your boat and stuff and hang around for the next 3 hours while it drips dry, but to actually be able to hang it up inside the case, know that the dehumidifier is going to kick on and start drying out all your gear, and you're going to be able to leave it there, not have to come back and check on it, and that it'll still be there and in good shape whenever you get back.
And that translates into more time that you can be on the boat and enjoying it.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. So that's pretty cool. So you don't have to deal with that wet gear and hauling back and forth.
Right, you got it.
I need that.
That's our customers. When they see it, they instantly get it.
Yeah. We're going to use that CCO one. We're going to put a bunch of stuff in there. I can't wait for everybody to see more of that.
Yeah, on the channels. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about you guys a little bit, right? What are y'all's backgrounds? I know you were in e-commerce for a bit, and you did design, you did construction, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll start with you, Jamin, and we'll go to you, Levi.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my background was actually, since I was a teenager, was online travel and e-commerce. At one point had a pretty large company. And then as kind of time went on, I've kind of always liked kicking something off, building something. I always had kind of like a product development mindset. I still do. And so with this, it was interesting to go from being, in a office environment where you're focused on technology and online marketing and those things to step into a world of which I had a lot of passion for, and boating. not much experience in manufacturing. But I just felt that the product would be well received, and so, you know, here we are.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I come from a background of, ever since I was really young, I had a passion for building things, designing things, creating things, something that I saw. Ever since I was little, I was not the kid that was like, hey, buy me this. I was like, I want to try and build that.
That's cool. Right. Yeah.
So, not really understanding the best way to pursue that. My older brother was in construction, built houses, and I was like, hey, he builds things.
Right.
And I like building things, so I'll build houses. So I got into construction at a young age and did that for many years, was good at construction, and then I realized, I was like, you know, I'm just doing the same thing over and over and over again. So then that kind of evolved to me starting my own company where I was still in construction, but I was doing high-end remodeling, customizations, and I was working with the customers on the design side too, because a lot of times you'd have people and they would have these ideas that they would talk about, but they didn't really know how to translate that into design. They didn't know who to go to. I would take what they were saying, what their idea was, and draw up designs, come up with ideas. We could do this, we could do that, and then would also, on the other side of it, make it happen.
That's cool. So speaking about design, what's the process of, you know, when someone wants to get a box, how do you guys go through that? How do you custom tailor it? Like, do you guys sit down with the customer and say, I want this and I want this and I want this in my box? Or is it more of a prefab type of deal?
Yeah, each one is definitely built to order. So we have quite a few upgrades that you can do to a Mazarine. For sure, the boat name, the boat logo on the front or the back or both, is almost a no-brainer for everybody.
Yeah,
a lot of people already have their logos, but some don't. Now they might be waiting for their boat, or maybe they just gotten it and haven't gotten a logo. So our team will actually work with them and do logo designs. We actually do it pretty often, and so we'll put that on the front. And then inside, we have some add-ons, so like a storage system. We have a divider system that you could put in. You can do inside artwork inside on a panel, which houses our electronics. We even have a scent package that allows it, as the dehumidifier runs, it'll pass through a cartridge there and actually give a nice smell to the box. Yeah, you got it. So, like, you know, new car scent. So when you open it up, instead of that musky smell that most people associate with the dock box, you open ours up and it smells like the tropics.
Oh, that's going to get rid of some fish smell for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, we like to interact very closely with customers. Our process is pretty simple. We take production deposits that gets into our production queue. We keep the customers pretty involved in the process, photos and videos and those kind of things as the build is happening. And then when the product's ready to roll, we'll do a full video review for each customer so they can see it in action. And then once they give the thumbs up, we'll send it off and get it right to the dock.
That's pretty cool, man. That's awesome.
The great part about it too, being a custom product, even as customizable as all those options are, they're still, you know, more or less standard options that they get to choose from. But since it is a custom product, we do have instances all the time where somebody's like, hey, you know, something about this particular aspect just doesn't really work for this situation. I want it. What can we do? And there's been instances where we've worked with them to create a personal solution to
custom
them.
Custom tailored.
Yeah. As an example, we just started working recently with the guys at Killer Dock. And they're building for us a dock extension. So if you're limited in your space on your dock, they can custom build a platform that hangs off to the side that allows the dock box to rest also, doesn't take out footprint. So yeah, we like those kind of things. We like the challenges.
So you're innovating always trying to find something new, something cool.
You
those
got
guys
it.
Are Killer Dock, make cool play station.
Yeah, we love those guys. We're big fans of them. And for your listeners, if you haven't seen what they do, it's really good. Yeah, I mean, they do awesome work.
I saw them for the first time here at the show, and I was taken away by their stuff.
Right, me too.
So speaking of being at the show, you guys are at so many major brands. Yeah. You guys are at Scout.
Right.
You guys are at Midnight Express. And, who else are you guys here with?
Yeah, Scout, Midnight Express, HCB Yachts is a they're good friends of ours. Denison Yachting, their group there. We have a box at the Freeman where they're doing all of their sea trials. out of. So yeah, we've got product, you know, really all over, and each one again is made, you know, just for each one of those companies. It's right. Branded for them, and so not only do they use it to store a lot of their swag and maybe a liquor bottle or two in there, but they also, you know, it's wonderful marketing. It really adds to the beauty of the show, the experience, and as it moves around from show to show, or you know, from the docks, it really just creates a really awesome visual, like for the brand.
Right. So, but these boxes aren't just made for the brands in terms of just for show. They're not just a showpiece. You guys are also now becoming part of the build process, right? So, can we talk a little bit about that? Someone's building a boat with Scout, with Freeman, with all these different manufacturers.
Yeah.
They now can get a custom Mazarine box as well, correct?
Yeah, that's really the direction that we're heading is with some of the premier center console companies, the ones that we've mentioned, we are kind of heading to where we become a light item through that build process, just like you're going to ask that customer kind of electronic package do you want, what kind of audio system do you want, what kind of, you know, sea deck, you know, do you want these things on the boat? And, you know, the goal there is we also want people to be like, what are you going to put next to the boat to hold the gear you don't want on deck? And that's where Mazarine comes in. And you know, so for our partners, they can show them the box, show them exactly how it works, and in some cases get it to them even before the boat is delivered. So it kind of keeps the process and the fun going.
Right. That's super cool. I mean, that'd be killer for, like, just going and buying a new boat and being able to get a custom box next to it to keep all your stuff. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know who wouldn't want that, right?
Even before it's there, you kind of already feel like you've got the boat already with, you know, with the Mazarine there and the logo on it. And you kind of keeps the juices flowing.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah. I love that. So where do you guys see the industry going in terms of marine storage and dock boxes? I mean, you guys are at the top. You beat everybody out. Those rinky-dink boxes, but... Where kind of is the innovation going? I feel like, Levi, I feel like your mind's always running, right? So what are you envisioning next, man?
Yeah, so there was actually a project that we'd wanted to get working on for a while. Had done all the design work and actually had original plugs, proof of concept built and everything, ready to start getting molds made because we wanted to move into a larger model. But we actually at one of our facilities had a fire.
Oh no!
And all of the R&D that went into that went up in flames.
Oh my goodness!
yeah. It was a tearful story. We don't like telling it too often, but
sorry to
hear that. Yeah,
But this is our first year back at Fort Lauderdale since, well, officially with our own booth since we launched in 2019 due to. Just not being able, COVID happening, not being able to get materials and stuff. It set us back so far. We got so far behind. We didn't want to push advertising because we're like, until we can keep up and get everybody taken care of, we don't have any interest in pulling in more.
Yeah.
Now that we finally got all that under control, we're back and seeing a lot of the people that we've talked to throughout the show, their specific interest in what we were planning on doing before has pushed us back into, hey, we need to revisit. But what we were looking for there was, you know, we already have a large case, which is intended for storing a lot of different gear. But of the gear items that really need to be included whenever you're talking about the people that we are, the fishermen being number one, are rods.
Yeah, right.
And our case is 72 interior. And that's just not enough for generally... all of your rods.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, we had a design worked up for a larger case with a really, really cool innovative storage system for the rods actually integrated into the case.
Oh, I can't wait to see that, man.
Yeah. And we really want to, we really listen to our customers and what they, you know, tell us. So in the newest model that we have that came out in May of this year, that's when we introduced an organization and storage system. Also the scent system that we have, even a new exterior option of design. But here at this show specifically, like Levi mentioned, the fisherman that we're talking to said, I wish that I could just put my rods and reels in this.
I take my rods and I have to put them in my truck when I'm done for the day, and they get banked up. And
yeah. And then the hole in the back.
It's just, I leave them in my truck.
Right.
And now my bed is just, it's useless.
Right,
it's
right.
It's just rods.
Yeah, exactly. So what we want to do is we want to take what Amazarine solves, which is security and performance with dehumidifying system, but allow what we hear the most of is allow people to put their rods and reels in the case. So it's in the pipe. And we try and take our time with R&D and not rush it too much.
Yeah, that's just something, like I said, getting back here at the show and just seeing the interest definitely has us being like, it's something that we need to revisit. So not at all right now, but definitely you're talking about future and where see things going. The cool thing is even with our case currently, like you said, the new model that we launched this year, the model before that, you know, was actually, it was a large case. It looked great. It had the signage on the front, but on the inside, it was straight wall. So there was no storage system built in. And from dealing with customers and going for guys that had a lot of, or a few large things, it was no big deal. But whenever you'd see people that had a lot of smaller items,
right,
you know, it's like you're the bottom of your kid's closet, you know, right. Everything just gets shoved in, and some of the stuff at the bottom you never see again.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And whenever I was seeing that, I was like, nah, we need to do something. We've got to work out something here to kind of give a solution to that issue. So that's why whenever we went into the new model, was like, need to design this so that it can have a really functional storage and organization system that works into it. And currently, we have that. We have the basket systems and hangers and rods and stuff that you see. But the cool thing about it was the way that designed the case, there's actually a lot of other basket and hanger options that can be implemented and designed. I mean, on my computer, there's already 37 additional 37 additional storage solutions that actually fit and function into there. But the way that we wanted to do it was, it's like, okay, let's start out with basic and then see how the product evolves, see where we see a need,
right,
see where we see customers saying, hey, I'd like to be able to organize this over in here better. I'd like to be able to do that, and then we're able to bring in different organization methods that it's already designed to accept.
And from a business standpoint, talk about innovation, like we talked about, we're really starting to develop really good relationships directly with the manufacturers, but also within the broker community. The broker community, if you think about it, let's just say that you're a broker and you just sold a 70 Viking to a customer.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a great sale and you want to take care of that customer. So Amazarine is one of a really small, limited choice that you have of what's a really nice gift.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, Amazarine, all we typically need is the boat logo to do everything that we need to do. And so we've had brokers numerous times that have bought boats, but then they buy Amazarine as a surprise gift.
Yeah.
And it goes there alongside the boat.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're really kind of getting it directly to the broker, the manufacturer community, and, of course, you know, direct with the boaters and their captains.
Right, right. Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, if I'm buying a boat from a broker and that's my gift, I mean...
You're pretty happy.
Yeah, man.
You're pretty happy.
For sure.
Yeah.
In front of me, I have the Flushmaster by Seamule. This little device simplifies the process for flushing your engines. All it takes is three easy steps. Plug the hose into the device, plug the hoses from the device into your motors, and press on. That's all it takes to preserve the longevity of your motors, ensuring 100% clean water is running through them. So if you want to preserve your motors, go to Seamule.com and go pick up a Flushmaster.
Let's talk a little bit about you guys, right? Outside of Amazarine, you guys are divers, right? That's what you're passionate about. So how did you guys get into diving? How did you find your passion in that? And how did you guys become friends? I mean,
my story is way more boring than his. His story is a lot better. But mine is I had a friend who just encouraged me to take it up when I was, you know, I would say like late 20s, early 30s, somewhere around there. And he kind of just said, let's just give it a shot and see if you like it. And we did a really quick shallow water dive and fell in love instantly. And then that became spearfishing, doing some active diving. And then that became entering tournaments, winning some.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And unfortunate part now with Amazarine, we're so busy we don't get to do it near as much as we want.
Yeah.
But my story's boring. His is a lot cooler.
Ironically, though, we've known each other at least most of my life since I was 3.
Oh, wow.
The funny thing is I didn't know that he was getting into diving, and I was working as a dive master at the time, and I was the dive master for his class whenever he showed up. And I was like, Jamin, what's up?
That's funny, man.
Which was cool.
To the beach in his wetsuit and tanks, yeah. And I was like, I know that guy.
Which was cool, you know, not just making him feel good or anything, but whenever you're working in the class, a lot of people, whenever they get, you know, do especially their first open water dive, they have very different reactions. And it is a telling point for people, because there's a lot of times as a dive master and as an instructor, whenever they're watching, there's people that at that point in time in the open water dive where we're like, I don't think you should pursue this, because a lot of people will tend to get really uncomfortable, want to feel panicky.
Right.
And if diving is one of those things where if you're going to panic underwater, you should not dive, because you can die.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
You need to be in control and calm. I've never been in a situation, and I've been in a lot of different situations diving, but there's never been one that by being calm and rational, you couldn't work out and get out of.
Right.
But any number of them would have killed me if I panicked.
Right.
But Jamin was like the calmest, coolest, most natural person. I'm like, you've never dove before? And he's like, no. But I mean, he was, while everybody else is like just like kind of worried and strict, I mean, he was like floating around, like blowing bubbles and stuff. I mean, it was, you know.
You were the troublemaker, man.
A fish taken to water. It was kind of funny to see. I was like, Jamin's going to do good. He's going to do good.
And then for us, it got really fun. When I bought my boat and got a 30-foot center console and got it rigged up for diving, we started entering tournaments. And then we had really good success there. Won a tournament there and got to do all the first table walks and all that kind of fun stuff. Okay. So once you experience that, and especially you experience, you know, the work that goes into, you know, finding, you know, great spots, diving down and taking your time, picking the fish that you want out, it's addicted really fast.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, when we had this idea for Mazarine, I thought, man, what an industry to be in, that one, when you're not working in the marine industry, you still get to be on the boat and do the marine stuff. So yeah, it's been good, and we've had a great relationship ever. I don't think we've ever even had an argument much of everything.
Thank God.
We very much trust each other. For our skill sets, and then I think the results speak for themselves with Mazarine and the product that we've been able to make. It's been good. It's been a really good relationship.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, Levi, how did you get into diving?
Yeah, so I told you my older brother did construction whenever I was younger, but he actually, he's 10 years older than I am. In his mid-20s, he went away from construction and he got into diving. He became a dive master and then a boat captain. And he had a passion for the ocean. And I would actually, whenever I was younger, I would spend, you know, 4 or 5 months out of the year living down here in Florida, because my parents had moved up to Montana.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I would come back down to stay with my brother, and I had family down here in Panama City still. And that was whenever he was working as a dive master, and he took me out. I was probably 11 or 12 the first time, and he's like, hey, we'll just go out to the jetties and you can check it out. And he, you know, had his own rig. He had a, you know, the Octo, pretty long Octo. He's like, you can just use the Octo. Went through all, you know, just all the safety things right off the bat. And he's like, okay, don't do this. Don't do this. Here's how you do this. Here's how you clear. What you do. And I'd grown up swimming, like pools, water. I loved it. I mean, I always felt comfortable in the water, no matter what. I loved being in the water. So whenever I went out and did that, took it the first time, went down the first time and went through a tank, came back to shore. He's like, what'd you think? I was like, that was the coolest thing ever. I was like, it was another world. I've never experienced that. The fish, the life under the water. It was, it was just like being on a different planet.
Yeah.
I was like, that was amazing. So then for like the next year or so, every time I'd come and see him, we'd go out and we'd do a couple dives, get a little bit deeper. And then he was like, okay, you're really good. Let's try throwing a BC on you. Then learning all the gear and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I was about 14 and my sister wanted to get certified because she was getting married. And I was like, you know, I've been diving and stuff like that, but I should go ahead and get certified too. Definitely don't.
It's a good idea.
I don't promote diving.
Be really clear. We're
I don't
not promoting
promote
that.
Diving before you're certified right. for anybody.
Of course.
Yeah.
Especially as my knowledge has increased, because it can be so dangerous. But in that particular instance, I had been diving for a while before, and I was like, well, I would like to go ahead and get certified. So I went through that with her. As I told you, I started off working in construction.
Yeah.
But, you know, back in 2007, 2008, 2009, that totally died right. off.
Yeah.
And I moved down here and started doing diving. So I was like, I'd already been certified. And then I took it up and got certified as a dive master, was doing that. And just really enjoyed doing that. And that's whenever he came along. And
I
was working as the dive master in his class whenever he got certified.
And I always feel the most comfortable diving with him because
yeah.
I'm like, whatever situation happens, I know that I've got one of my closest friends and also a certified dive master there with me.
He's yep. got your back.
He's got my back, yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you guys are spearfishing, but in a different place than a lot of the people that generally think of spearfishing. I feel like a lot of people think, you know, you go to the Bahamas, you go to South
right.
Florida. You guys are upper panhandle
yeah.
Gulf side.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
our diving that we have there is actually really, really great. We've got obviously some man-made stuff, coops and ghettos and things like that. But we've got some really great and deep hard bottom
okay.
That's there. But you got to go down to get it. I would say our average dive is probably around, what would you say, 90 feet, somewhere around there?
90 to 120, most of our diving.
Yeah.
Up in the panhandle, though, Florida has a lot of wrecks, and
yeah.
up in the panhandle we have thousands of wrecks
really?
Out,
yeah.
out in the water. Bridge spans as well, whenever the old bridges were taken down, so there's a lot of bridge spans sunk. So there's a ton of really good diving available out there that holds life.
Okay.
Holds
right.
fish. Yeah.
Right. So it's great scenic diving,
right.
but it's also good active diving if you're spearfishing or lobstering. You know, you can do both of those there. The good thing about us is we don't have to go very far out to hit that. We don't have to travel, you know, 50 or 60 miles. You know, I would say probably the farthest we've got would be about 20 miles and kind of work our way back in. But we've got
yep.
great diving that are just, you know, 3 or 4 miles offshore.
Right. What do you guys primarily shoot up there?
Fish.
Well, yeah.
we have quite a bit of red snapper. We have quite a bit of amberjack, black snapper, all kinds of grouper. Got spotted, gag, gray.
As a group, we primarily go out after red and black snapper and gag grouper.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
So that's your bread and butter
yeah.
up there.
Yeah, and then lobster, and we just mostly have shovelhead.
Okay.
You know, so
shovel nose.
Excuse me. Yeah, thank you. Shovel nose lobster. You know, we get that fun time, you know, to go lobster too. But it's a great place to,
yeah.
if you're going to be a boater, it's a wonderful place. Not only, you know, rod and reel fishing, but also
right.
Diving and spear fishing.
Yeah. So over the years, how have you guys seen the biodiversity of fish change?
Boy, that's a good question.
I'll jump in on this because
yeah.
I have a pretty strong opinion on the matter.
Let's hear it, man.
Over the past few years, you know, you see regulations change and get stricter on the taking of red snapper being one, especially. Granted, this year, actually, it has loosened up. There's been a much longer season this year. And I'm glad that it was moving in that direction.
Yeah.
But as a diver that gets down and sees the biodiversity firsthand, a lot of the times these regulations come through and we're like, the things that they're telling people and the reasons that they're saying they're doing this are not jiving with what's
the reality
we're seeing underwater, because
right.
they'd close down, you know, for the recreational fisher snapper to these limited short seasons, 2 fish a day, while at the same time not changing anything on the commercial side.
Right.
Guys that go out and don't have a season, they have a weight annually. So
yeah.
they can pull up and pull every fish off of an entire reef, and it's totally legal.
That's
but they're still regulated by size. So those commercial fishermen, they pull up everything, then they throw back all the small ones that are just, they're dead. They
yeah.
float off, they're getting eaten by shark and bring in extra shark, you know, raise the shark population, and they're killing off all of the snapper.
Yeah.
But even still, with that happening, we would drop down and see schools of thousands of snapper in some spots.
Thousands. I mean, like overloaded.
Like yeah. we would drop onto a wreck where you would think it was bait fish and it was snapper. You know, around the wreck. And it's just the wildest thing that you've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, these schools, and at the same point in time, they're like, well, we're going to limit the season this year because the population is just too low. We're like, where are you checking the population? Where are you coming up with this? Because the spots that we're diving are covered in them.
Yeah.
I mean, and then like triggerfish. I personally don't really like triggerfish, but everybody else that I dive with loves triggerfish. That has become the most recent pandemic of the ocean, in my opinion, because these reefs, hard bottoms, and wrecks that used to be covered up in a really diverse fish species, now you drop down and you don't see hardly any of those other smaller fish, but you see schools of triggerfish, which we never, back whenever I was first diving and stuff like that, you never saw trigger in large schools. You'd see one or two swimming and they were kind of spread out, dispersed on the reef, but they were never schooled. Now you go out there and you try and drop down a bait and you can't get a bait to the bottom because it's
ball.
It's completely destroyed. And then you drop down with a tank and you're like, what's going on? And you can't even make it to the bottom before you see a cloud of triggerfish coming up off the bottom at you.
This year, I will say though, you're right that this year it feels like our opinion has started to take some weight. They've lengthened seasons there. And then of course, like we all deal with, you know, big lionfish population. We do quite as much as we can to try and eliminate as much of that as we can in, you know, various tournaments and those kind of things. But, you know, overall, I think we're probably in the group with anyone else, at least in the spearfishing world, that we always would like the seasons to be longer.
Yeah.
We always would like to be able to, you know, do more. We respect the laws and the regulations that are in place.
Of course.
We may not agree with them, but we respect them.
Right.
And so I think we have that mindset of, you know, let's just, everyone, let's play by the rules.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they listen to us fishermen and spearfishermen.
It just needs to be a strong consideration for it. The people that live and it's a huge part of their life in these tropical areas, you know, Florida and all over, you know, the recreational fishermen is a huge part. It's not just the commercial, you know, so whenever they're making these regulations, they really need to think about the balance, not just the money coming in from the commercial side, from a bunch of, you know, contracts that are just sold out to other vessels to do their fishing for them.
Right.
And like the economic impact too. The economic impact that it has.
If there's a fish population problem, let's cut back on the commercial side. The people that are wiping out entire reefs at a time.
Right.
Yeah, man. It wouldn't be bad to even test that out. You know,
right.
You should see how it is, and if it works, then maybe they start implementing it, you know?
Yeah, and things it what they're doing this year hopefully will have a positive effect. And open more up next year.
I hope so.
Okay.
So do you guys, either individually or together, have any cool fish stories that you guys have? Or any situations that you guys have been in together?
Yes. And I think we both have the same story, but I'll shorten it and condense it. We were fishing on a 51 Cabo Express and diving. And we had quite a few divers on there, one of which is a very good friend of mine, and he is an EMT, he's a firefighter. Well, we got caught in a just horrific lightning storm. It came on us really fast, torrential downpour. The radar was not working. We were kind of like spinning in circles, red lightning strikes happening all around us. Well, our friend reminded everyone, said, guys, listen, don't touch the metal on the boat. Because it's conductive, you can get electrocuted. So everyone's kind of keeping their hands in, like this. So we're pulling the guys from the water, you know, into the boat, and everyone's being really careful. Everyone's just trying to get under and out of the thing. So he just turns around and, without thinking, he just kind of puts his hand up on the.
As he was walking up into the cabin,
he says something like, "Okay, guys, what's that?" And then there's a big boom, and he just hits the deck.
Oh my god!
He actually got electrocuted and knocked him out for quite a while. He was fine. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't be telling the story if he wasn't.
Yeah.
But so the unfortunate part is we had all of us on there. We have this emergency situation happen. We go, well, don't worry, we have an EMT on board, and then we realize that our EMT was the guy, you know, on the ground. But the best part about this story is we actually got it all on video. We had a GoPro running, and you can see the lightning zap. You can see him kind of just hit and fall down. And he was okay eventually, but I think he said he went about 2 weeks where the electrical effect kind of gave him a form of Tourette's. So he had kind of a nasty mouth for a couple of weeks.
His doctor said that it was called an electrical concussion.
Right, right.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. Neither did I before, but yeah.
Yeah, that
was pretty wild.
That was the craziest and definitely the scariest, but he's all good now.
Thank God.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, that's definitely probably one of the wildest stories that we have.
Yeah.
There was one time we were over hanging out on the island. We had some boats, you know, beach, and we're like, hey, you know what would be sweet is to get some fish, you know, cook up some fish over here on the fire on the island. We're like, hey, let's just head out. We've got gear in the boat, so we just hopped back on the boat and went out, and we knew there was a wreck, you know, just like 5 miles off. So we dropped down. Drop down onto the wreck. The wreck is a ship that's sunk in about 70 feet of water, and it's broken in half. So you swim around this particular one. The visibility was good, really clear, but you get down around the wreck, which is where all the fish are, and there was, at that point in time, a big bait ball that was huddling around the wreck. So as you're swimming, you're trying to look in the wreck, looking for some grouper at that point in time. It was what we were after. And I've got my spear gun, and I'm literally like a wand like this, trying to get the bait fish to move. Like I do this just to get them, clear them for like 5 feet at a time so I could kind of see. And he was following me around. He's like, he was still really fresh. He'd just gotten certified.
Yeah.
It was probably one of like his first or second dive after getting certified.
I think it was like second dive trip. Yeah.
And so he's like, I'm not going to spearfish. He hadn't done it yet. He's like, but I want to come down and I want to go with you and see what it's about. See how the spearfishing goes. I'm like, okay, yeah, come follow me. And going around, come around the ship, get to the part where it's broken in half, clearing the bait fish, go through, get to the other side, clear the bait fish, and then all the bait fish disappear, and all I see is a side of a tiger shark about this tall, like 5 feet in front of me, 13 foot tiger shark. And I turn around, I was like,
oh. Okay, no problem.
Right up.
We got up a little quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a
big.
Yeah. And we knew enough about tiger sharks to say nothing down here is worth that. So
you don't mess with them.
Yeah.
I don't feel like fighting the tiger shark for a fish.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What's like the biggest fish you've speared and you've speared? Or like most memorable maybe, or
mine is a 31 pound red snapper. I was fortunate enough to have shot it during a tournament.
Okay.
And it placed, we actually ended up winning that tournament. That's mine.
Yeah.
I actually don't know what yours is. What is yours?
Yeah, it's I've done a lot of spearfishing. So like favorite things that I have speared have been gag and snapper, and my biggest snapper, which I might be a little bitter about because I've been spearfishing a lot longer than he has, and I don't have a 31 pounder. My biggest red is a 27.
Still a big jigger.
Which is crazy because, I mean, they're like, you see these little sea-doo things around here. I'm like, dude, you get onto a 27 pound red snapper, and it's like grabbing onto one of those sea-doos. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But my biggest would be amberjack.
Okay.
Which I've gotten about a 45, 50 pound amberjack, and those things, they're fun. They'll take you for a ride.
How many shafts did you put through that?
Just one.
Just one?
Just one.
Damn, yep. Man. So you had, he dragged you around for a bit, or did you stone him?
No, it was unfortunately not a stone shot. I've gotten pretty good at spearfishing where the large majority, I'd say 8 out of 10 shots are a stone shot on fish. But on that one, it was not a stone shot, and he was spinning me around in a tornado, and I'm just pull the line all the way up and get a hold of the shaft, pull him between the legs, and just bear hug him with your legs and turn the lights out.
Yeah.
Damn. Have you guys been in any sketchy situations with sharks?
Yeah. Yeah. We We've gone up, I think on a few dives, he and I and another guy that we do a lot of diving with, we've gone up back-to-back a few times. Yeah, really? Where we've got our kills and we're just getting circled. And sharks in our area, they're, especially the reef sharks, they tend to kind of just be curious, not really aggressive. But one time we were coming up and they were getting a little too friendly. We kept kind of poking them with our spear gun, happened to like get them out of the way. But he and I have never done what one of our friends did. A shark was kind of chasing him around on a dive he was coming up. And we don't really know exactly why this happened, but he decided that in order to get this shark to leave, he would shoot it with the spear gun. He shot the shark with a spear gun. He comes up from the dive, we're on deck, and he's like, come over here. He's like, he goes, I shot a shark. We're like, you what? He's like, we shot a shark. And I was like, why? He's like, he wouldn't come. And the funny part is, I don't know how much he had in his bag, but he had like 2 black snapper, and he was so worried about that fish that he shot this shark. So we actually had to grab the gun from him, pull him up. The shark's like kind of floating alongside the boat. We're trying to figure out what to do. And one of our good friends, guy who was like on his boat, he just reached over to grab the line to kind of just pull it. And the shark flipped and it ripped his hand. So blood's going everywhere. His wife gets sick watching it all. We got another guy. His brother is still in the water. So we're trying to like deal with this entire situation. So we kind of make the joke. The shark actually left. We got it off the line and he left, but we have the joke now that somewhere.
It was not at all a vital shot. No. It was just, he was attached to the shark now.
So yeah, we got the spear out and the shark, you know, swam off. And so we have a running joke that whenever we dive that somewhere out there is a one-eyed shark that's waiting for us to, you know, come back. But we've been pretty safe for the most part. We respect the seriousness of it and how careful we have to be.
Of course. Are there as big of a problem by you guys?
The interesting thing about that, so all of my diving really has been up and around the panhandle. Whenever I started diving, I was doing a lot of dives per year, you know, because of working as a dive master. And I went the first 2 years without ever seeing a shark.
Yeah.
Whoa, at all.
Really?
I dove for 2 years without ever seeing a shark. And it was getting to a thing where I was like, I was kind of in my head about it because I had always handled situations good and calm, but I was like, I've never seen a shark. I wonder how I'm going to handle that situation whenever it happens, because is that going to be the thing that makes me panic?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. I haven't seen it. And then actually the first time I ever saw a shark was like year 3 of diving and was lobstering on some hard bottom. It was like upside down, you know, up to your shoulders, reaching into a hole, pulling out some shovel nose, and just get like the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, and you don't know why.
Yeah.
Like poked my head up, and there was a little reef, you know, 6-foot reef shark kind of swam by, and I was like, huh, okay,
yeah,
there's a shark.
There's a shark.
He wasn't interested in me. I wasn't interested in him, really. It was just he went on by, and that was, I think I saw 2 sharks that year. Then the next year, I saw like 10 sharks throughout the year. The following year after that, it was like we would see 1 shark every time we went out.
Yeah, it's almost like a given.
All of a sudden it blew up, and we're like, man, it's crazy, you know, how much more sharks we're seeing this year. Then the year after that, it was every other dive we would see a shark. And sometimes 2 sharks on the same spot.
Yeah.
The year after that, it was every dive we dropped, we were seeing sharks.
So they're booming in population.
Yeah.
Yeah. And eventually we just got to the point that was just, it's just part of the.
Yeah. It was like, hey, we're diving with sharks these days.
Yeah.
Man, I get scared sometimes. I get sketchy.
Yeah.
I get afraid when I'm down there. We've been in situations where we were in the Bahamas once, and we had a 13 footer and an 11 footer, tiger sharks circling the boat.
Yeah.
While we were there, and we're like,
yeah,
we're getting out of
right.
here, man.
Right. Yeah, depending on what you've got, you know, if you're lobstering, there's no, you know, typically no blood in the water unless you're spearing too. So, you know, lobstering's a little easier. But if you've got, you know, 3 or 4 dead fish in your bag and you've got a couple, 3 guys down on a dive and you see a shark, we know what they're there for.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're pretty respectful that when we see, we're like, okay, just you stay over there. I'll be out of here in 2 minutes. Don't worry.
One of the big things that we did, actually, so we made the change the year that we went, and it went from being like once a trip to once every other dive. one of our friends, he always dove with fish bags instead of a stringer.
Okay. Right.
And he pretty much never got bugged. He never got messed with. And all of us guys that had our fish on stringers, they were always on top of us, always on top of us. And we were always beating them back. And we're like, we got to get fish bags. So all of us made the change. The next year, we were all diving with fish bags instead of stringers. Because, even still, it brings them into the area because there's blood in the water.
Yeah.
But they don't have that visual recognition of a twitching fish hanging off of a stringer that's pulling them in.
Interesting. We
know that, the sharks, they're not there for us. They're not interested in us. But you have something they're very interested in hanging off of you, and it's that's still a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
But putting them into the fish bag and getting that visual aspect away from them, and the kind of twitchy fish, that kind of pulls them in away from them, made a huge difference.
Yeah.
And then even still, we would have some days where we were going out and we knew that the area that we were going had such big fish that we wouldn't be able to fit them in the fish bag. So we knew we were taking a stringer. And what we actually started doing there is we would take lift bags, just a standard lift bag, and have it curled up and attached to the stringer and hit the bottom. And if sharks came in, I'd just pull out the octo, clip the stringer to the lift bag, shoot it up to the boat, and the guys on the boat would go over and grab it out of the water real quick.
Wow.
Yeah.
How'd you guys manage that? Was it like a signal or something you guys
It's a big orange lift bag, so as soon as it hits, it's like right there. Because we bounce dive.
Yeah.
So we throw over a buoy, so the person that's actually still up on the boat, he's just kind of floating around the spot and constantly keeping an eye on the waters.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Yeah, We like to play by the rules, but even the rules sometimes we still got to be pretty careful, especially in what we're doing.
Of course. Well, I got to get up there and come dive
anytime.
With you guys.
Yeah, anytime.
I'd love to experience that.
Absolutely, man. Anytime.
For sure.
Anytime.
Well,
thanks.
I appreciate you guys coming by and doing this with me.
Man, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it's awesome. Fun.
All right, guys. You guys got to check out Mazarine Dock Boxes. They're kick-ass. They're the best in the game. That's it, guys. They're the Rolex, they're the Ferrari, they're the Bugatti of dock boxes. See you later, guys.
Thanks for joining us on CCO's The Science of Fishing. We hope that this episode was helpful and you learned something for the next time you're wetting a line. Before we cast off, a special thanks to our sponsors, Sea Mule and Black Reef Co. Stay hooked by following us on social media at Science of Fishing and hitting the subscribe button. And if you know someone who'd enjoy this, don't hesitate to share. Until we meet again, catch 'em up.